Chapter 4. When the horns heralding the arrival of the mine folk finally went silent, all of us decided to follow Leader Zaire through the village, past the farmlands, and toward the pit and the ancient snake tree the village was named after. The first thing that caught my attention was the creepy centipede-like creatures several of the newcomers were riding on, and I watched in fascination as the men guided the giant centipedes to stretch their long bodies over the chasm that separated the village from the mines.
"Leader Zaire!"
the man who was obviously leading the expedition greeted and hopped off his creepy, crawly mount.
"It has been a while. How was your last visit to the uppers?"
"Lieutenant Villy,"
Zaire said and clasped forearms with the man, who resembled Thass quite a bit with his large muscles and tattooed bald skull.
"The journey was most illuminating. As you can see, I have returned with the newly honored Regent Siskern and his appointed ambassador friend from Nata Isle."
"I see the rumors about outsiders are true,"
the man named Villy remarked, as he looked over my crew and me with a disdainful eye.
"I can vouch for him, Lieutenant,"
Thass spoke up and crossed his arms in front of his chest.
"I will personally escort them to Theraphin myself."
"You think the captain will want an audience with outsider scum?"
Lieutenant Villy snorted.
"No," Thass shrugged. "But he will want an audience with his son, and it just so happens his son is bringing guests."
Oh, man. Of course there would be more winning over the locals, or a.k.a. getting my new friend's family to like me. The man sneered, but Thass just returned his gaze with that impenetrable stone wall he had. I made a mental note to take a page out of Thass's book and just stare at whoever annoyed me next.
"They're coming to Mine Town," he stated,
and the lieutenant seemed to realize it was pointless to argue.
"We shall see," Villy rumbled in his deep voice. "For now, my sergeants and I'll carry on like usual. Once we have loaded up supplies and medicines, we will depart for Mine Town tomorrow morning. But I will not take them if you are not here, Thass."
"Don't worry," he bit back, "or will be."
The snake tree thrummed at this, and it was something I wasn't sure if I'd imagined the sound or not. By mutual and silent agreement, we let Zaire take the lead as he finished filling in the lieutenant on the status of things after the last RSE. It was only natural from that point for my crew and I to break away and haul ourselves back to the cottage so we too could prepare for what sounded like another expedition. However, my mind had somehow chosen to linger over the strangeness I felt when I was back in front of that sentient tree, and the harrowing experience of the trials came back to me in a way I didn't want to dwell on for too long. During my trial of the mind, I was confronted by the ancient tree spirit, and it managed to illuminate the current affliction I was having due to the way the corrupt Chamberlain Senna had attempted to wreck my mind. The wily bastard was unsuccessful in his attempts, and ultimately he paid for it with his life. But that didn't mean there wasn't some damage left behind. As it was, I had found it impossible to meditate ever since, which, as an Asher, and a traveler to boot, meditation was a practice necessary to keep us fine-tuned and functioning. So if I didn't get a handle on the accursed ringing-slash-pain in my head soon, I would begin to experience much more than discomfort or trouble sleeping. That night, as I curled up with my three lovers all together in the biggest room of the cottage, I tried not to let the anxious feeling get the best of me. Of course, trying to suffer in silence when I was surrounded by the people who knew me best was impossible. And that was without factoring in the reality one of them was a bona fide touch telepath.
"My love?"
Zoe finally broke the silence we all tried and failed to ignore.
"What is it?"
I sighed and cuddled them all close as I searched for the right words. "There's another reason I need to go to Minetown," I finally confessed in the darkness of the room. "The snake tree told me how I might be able to get my head in order. Apparently there is someone by the name of Maz who is supposed to be able to help me, but other than their name, I don't know anything else."
"Is the pain very bad?"
Shay asked. "No," I said slowly. "Not for the most part, but I know my performance will begin to really take an impact soon, if it hasn't been affected already."
We'll make sure we help you find this moss,
Amaya declared as she tangled her legs with as many of ours as she could.
And in the meantime, I can be sure to bring a jar of some of that healing clay.
All right,
I yawned as I snuggled down into the bed. I really was in good hands with these women, and as long as I didn't push it too hard with anything time-trance related, I would be fine. And with that peaceful thought in mind, I fell into a dreamless yet restful sleep. Morning, like always these days, came howling in all too early, and the way I felt mildly hungover just reminded me I wasn't operating in tip-top shape. Then my contentment from last night evaporated slightly when I realized the ringing in my head was the cause of me waking up earlier than everyone else. Soon, however, everyone was up and dressed, and we made our way to the village outskirts. Unfortunately, I grew grumpier and grumpier the longer we trekked toward the edge of the village, and by the time I could make out the silhouette of the gnarled tree, I was grinding my teeth in agitation. Thass was already there with that dickbag lieutenant and his three creepy centipedes, and two of the three insect mounts were loaded up with various crates and sacks, while the third did its best bridge impression over the crack in the abyss. The two Terrans also looked like they'd just got done arguing, if the pissed-off fuming noises were anything to go by.
Ready! Vili barked,
and without waiting for a response from anyone, he gestured jerkily to his two sergeants, and we were all officially setting out for another unexplored part of Ter Isle. One of the most disorienting things about traversing Ter was just how multifaceted and paradoxical this strange place really was. By all rights, it should feel like we were all descending deeper into the odd, hollowed-out talon shape of the island. But for some reason, our expedition led us to traversing some steep slopes. We were clearly going uphill, though, since what little sunlight that managed to filter down from the top was fading the deeper we went. It was trippy, and I wondered at the physics of this magical world. But that confusing question plus the incessant ringing in my ears had me turning toward Horus in a bid to distract myself. "Hey, H," I said. "What?" he grunted as he scrambled over a boulder. "Tell me more about these awesome swords you forged for me," I suggested.
"You only fought with the one so far, huh?"
Horus clarified. "Yeah," I chuckled when I remembered how he'd just finished cutting and forging only the first one of my dual swords when a red sky hit, and I needed to take care of some business. "There wasn't time for you to forge the second one."
"Oh, yeah,"
he said with his trademark roguish grin. "I almost forgot."
"I don't see how you could," I teased.
"That was your Asher birthday."
"Yes, I guess so,"
he said, as he glanced down bashfully at his very own duelist stone. With Fasha's help, the gem cutter and the metallurgist had fashioned a necklace chain, which his stone now hung from.
"You guess so?" I parroted. "You never forget ashing your first demon, pal."
"Ha! You're right," Horus smirked.
"By the way, how did the one sword handle? Were you able to pick up on its attributes? I think the two herald cores transformed into swiftness and decisiveness."
"I definitely was decisive, I remember that," I remarked, and pulled out the particular blade in question for both of us to examine.
"Hey, there's no marking at the base."
"Let me see that,"
he said, and took the smallish curved sword from my hands.
"No shape, right?"
I asked, and pulled out my second sword. In the past, forging a blade with a herald core usually left behind a certain shape etched just above where the blade met the hilt. Depending on what shape it was, there was a corresponding number to go along with it. I remembered something about the sides of the shape equaling the number of times the wielder was able to summon the core's supernatural properties before the weapon disintegrated under the influx of power. These herald blades were unique in the sense they were actually two herald cores that had first been cut in half, joined together through magic, and then forged by an expert alchemist between two weapons that acted in tandem. This odd technical and theoretical balancing act was hopefully what was needed in order to prolong the lives of the cores, but only time would truly tell if what we did worked. For now, the absence of a shape on either of the black blades was promising.
"This is exciting,"
Horus said, after he returned the blade he was holding back to the X-shaped scabbard on my back.
I hope the absence of the demarcation means the cores are stable. I can't wait for you to tell me how they handle in tandem.
Same, I said. Is there any reason the cores could become unstable and, like,
explode at a critical moment and blow off both your hands?
The Falcon Man finished.
Yeah, that, I deadpanned.
I don't know, he admitted with a shrug.
I'm just as new to combining volatile herald cores as you are.
Gee, thanks. I snorted like I was annoyed, but the light-hearted conversation with my best friend took my mind off the tedious journey through the lowers. But eventually the distraction wore off, and by the time I was feeling aggravated again, the lieutenant called for a break at the base of a steep switchbacking road.
What are these for?
Anwar asked when the disgruntled man began tossing sticks at us without any explanation.
Torches!
One of the sergeants grunted as he wrapped a strip of fabric around the end of the stick he was holding.
The light is too poor now.
I didn't really notice how dark it became due to the stone shining around my neck. But when I had a moment to sit and take in my surroundings, I was amazed at how dark it really was. The light from the surface barely penetrated this far down, and if it weren't for the dim phosphorescence of the trees, we would have been almost blind. Lieutenant, I asked, as all of us focused on our torch-making. I've heard there's a type of tree in the lowers that has the ability to burn for 1,000 days. Have you ever heard of anything like that? The man froze for half a beat before he nodded.
That is a forest nearby full of this type of endlessly burning wood, he confirmed, and my hopes grew. It is in the valley below Minetown.
Would you mind taking us there first before we continue onwards?
Regent Siskern asked in his most conciliatory yet authoritative tone. The lieutenant grimaced for a split second, as if he smelled something awful, but he shuddered it away so fast I thought I'd imagined it.
Of course, Regent, Vili said. But first, let me dismiss my men so they may take the supplies to the townsfolk. Then I will be your guide.
Thank you, Siskern nodded.
And at that moment, I thought I'd misjudged the bad-tempered lieutenant. While all of us took a break and munched on a snack of jerky, dried fruit, and nuts, the two sergeants departed with the centipedes, and I watched the bobbing torchlight for as long as I could until they disappeared from my sight. My crew and I were definitely alone now and completely at the mercy of our appointed guide.
This way, Regent.
Vili gestured for Siskern to start on the trailhead leading through the jagged and angular forest.
Welcome to the petrified forest of the damned.
Maybe I shouldn't have put all of my trust into the guy who just said the unfortunate name of the forest with a shade of glee that made me suspicious, and I vowed to keep an eye out on him. Part of me wanted to change my mind and say, forget it, but I really wanted a power source for my airship, so I followed Siskern with Horace and my crew trailing behind us. So, I said into the gloom after we'd all been hiking for some time in silence. What kind of tree are we looking for, by the way?
You'll know them when you see them,
the lieutenant said with a cryptic air that had me drawing one of my blades as my instincts jangled at me like static under my skin. Then I nudged Horace, and I could tell he thought something was up too.
The trees you want are just over this ridge.
We followed Vili as he led us through trees that were somewhat smaller and more uniform than the ones we'd seen around Terre so far. Something about these skeletal trees was familiar, too, but I couldn't put my finger on it. And before I could muse on it some more, our guide brought us to a halt in a small clearing. Then, with a machete-looking blade he pulled from his scabbard, he walked up to the nearest dark tree and hacked off a sizable branch.
I believe this is what you're after, he said.
And in a well-practiced move, he slammed the branch into the ground where it burst into a shriek of blue flame. All of us shouted something in alarm or excitement as the light from the flame burned really brightly for a number of minutes before it died down again.
What is it that makes the wood do such a thing?
Zoe asked as she examined another tree branch on the ground.
They say it is because the forest used to contain people before they were turned into trees by the moon,
Vili explained. All of us froze when the implication sank in. Back on Nada Isle, we recently celebrated Mid-Crescent, the sacred Aventolian holiday observed by everyone. One of the tidbits about this little holiday was how there was a forest on every island that was supposedly comprised of people who sacrificed themselves to appease the jealous moon, and were now cursed to sing the moon's song every year as magical singing trees. And apparently, the petrified forest of the damned was Tear's singing forest, which meant burning this wood was similar to burning. Amaya suddenly gasped out when she placed an innocent hand on one of the tree trunks. Then her eyes clashed with mine, and they reflected exactly what I was thinking. "You know what?" I said as I smiled at the lieutenant. "I think we've changed our mind about this forest. Thank you, though."
"Really?"
the man asked with an arched eyebrow.
"Why the sudden change of heart?"
"Do you even know what this forest is?"
the Oryx woman practically wailed out in her distress, and Anwar had to catch the Augur woman when her knees gave out from the shock of her discovery.
"Aye, I do, little girl."
Vili's tone was menacing, and I just knew we were seeing the man's true colors for what they were.
"But do you?"
Just when I was about ready to make a rush for the man with the blade in my hand thrumming under my fingers, the man somehow slipped in between the flickering shadows the torchlights threw around and vanished.
"Where did he go?"
Horace bellowed, after he loosed an arrow at the spot the lieutenant was just standing in.
"Vili!"
Thaz roared, as he spun around in a circle in search of the treacherous man. But being abandoned by our guide in the midst of the Forest of the Damned was about to be the least of our problems.
"Alex, do you hear that?"
Zoe called from where her back was nearly pressed against mine. At first I had no idea what she was talking about, until suddenly I did. It wasn't so much that I could hear it, but feel it. A low, deep rumble steadily picking up in intensity until all of us could feel the change in the atmosphere. Then a large plume of dirt geysered into the air in the center of our group and made all of us fly apart from our kill circle. Jet-black termite creatures the size of giant schnauzers poured out from the sudden anthill that formed up from the middle of the clearing. The cone of dirt was perfectly over the very place Vili combusted that branch, so it had to be more than a coincidence, and I had to wonder if this asshole planned this all along, or was just an opportunist. Whatever the case, the guy was a fucking dick.
"Vili!"
Thass bellowed again.
"My father and I might not get along, but he will never forgive you if I die at the end of your treachery!" "You forget, Thass!"
The lieutenant's cruel voice seemed to ricochet from all directions at once.
"Captain Therafin doesn't even know you've come!"
"Doc, take me,"
the big man to my left muttered after a beat. And after that, there was no more talking from any of us, as we all worked together to fend off the sea of this Mesozoic nightmare. The torches helped to ward them off whenever they started to get too curious about what our ankles tasted like. The giant insects were awful, and on top of salivating pincers, they also had large lobster claws that were just as effective at decapitation as they were at digging.
"Shay!"
I heard Horace yell, and after I used my dual swords like an improvised pair of scissors to lop off a termite's head, I turned just in time to catch the awesome sight of the Phoenix Woman launching herself off of her brother's back so she could kick one of the jumping beasts out of the air. When she landed, it was in a crouch, which left Horace clear to fire an arrow into the bug waiting to snap at her. It was awesome. Boom! A bright red flash over to my right told me Anwar was using her magical fireballs to defend her sister as well as herself, while they stood up against some boulders for shelter. Crack!
"Die, pestilence!"
Regent Siskern brandished his stone-bladed whip with deadly accuracy, and each crack added to the lobster mite casualties that were rapidly stacking up. And the frenzy of all of us slashing down these ridiculous bugs made me laugh like a maniacal overlord. I must have added my own battle cry to the fray because I felt the roar of it in my chest when it echoed back at me from all sides. One, two, one, two. My herald blades sang their own harmony, and I was entranced in such a still focus I almost thought I'd summoned a time trance by accident. There was such an ease to the way I wielded my dual weapons I'd never felt before. I'd been practicing a lot with Zoe's help, but this time it was like the blades themselves were doing the dancing, and I just had to hang on. The herald energy was thrumming ardently as well, but I didn't need to summon the power yet. For now, I would let the black steel in my hands dictate what it wanted.
Hiss!
The lobster mites hissed and shrieked as we all cut down wave after wave of their numbers, until about 30 carcasses and parts thereof were scattered around the clearing in a gruesome display. The last handful or so were getting desperate, and they attempted to tear us apart by any means necessary. One lunged at Zoe's exposed flank, and I threw my right sword directly in its multifaceted eye in order to knock it off its trajectory. At the bug's squeal of pain, Zoe turned, saw what was happening, and then kicked the lobster mite until it flopped over on its back. Without missing a beat, I launched myself into a flying leap and landed with the point of my remaining blade stabbing through the back of its neck.
Oh!
An animalistic howl rent the dark around us, and all the lobster mites froze in place.
Oh!
At the second howl, the bugs turned tail and scrambled to get back underground. And then the sound of many, many feet rose up and thundered along the ground at a rapid clip.
Dark hell,
Horace croaked, as he suddenly lowered his bow.
Everyone, put your weapons away. We don't want to be seen as disrespectful by these guys right away, trust me.
What do you mean? I asked, as the rumble beneath my feet just grew and grew.
What is going on, feather-headed man?
Thass demanded.
You seem to know something. What is coming?
The Falcon Man locked eyes with me and pressed his lips together for a brief moment. True worry marred his pale brow, and I frowned at the expression that looked so out of place from his usual confident swagger.
Something much more deadly, he breathed.